Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Tonight in Cleveland, 10 Republicans will meet for their first debate in their bid to win the party's nomination for president. The other 7 Republican candidates will meet beforehand for their own debate. Who made it into which debate is based on polls. But in an age of cell phones, how accurate are the polls? Or perhaps the question is, how much more difficult is it for pollsters to get an accurate view of public opinion? Andrew Smith is director of the University of New Hampshire's Survey Center. He's with us now. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, when I think back to even 4 years ago or 8 years ago, the difference in how many people now have mobile phones and use that as their primary phone and have gotten rid of those landline phones, how do pollsters keep up with that?
Well, it is very difficult, and it's a problem across the country, less so in New Hampshire, thankfully. But what we can do if you're using live interviewers is that you can call cell phones. It costs more. It takes more calls to complete a survey. But you can do it. There are ways around it. The bigger issue is that our response rates have been declining overall for the last 20 to 30 years, and it's been an ongoing process. Cell phones.
And why is that? Is that because of the switch to cell phones, or is that separate?
No, I think it has to do with multiple things. First off, that back in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, polls were more unusual. There weren't that many of them, and if you got called by a pollster, it was kind of a special thing. We've seen an increase in the number of polls that are done, both at the national level, but also in state elections as well, to the point where people don't see it as a unique thing to express their opinions to a pollster. The second big thing that happened, though, was the change in telephone technology that added call waiting, caller ID, and call blocking, which made it easier for people to not pick up the phone when a pollster called. So all of those things, I think, combined have led to a decrease in response rates. And cell phones is just one more recent component of this.
Well, and caller ID, I would think, is one of the biggest problems with cell phones because everybody's got caller ID on their cell phone. And so if you see a number you don't recognize, you're less likely to pick it up.
Absolutely. The other issue with cell phones is it is still technically a collect call when we call a cell phone. There's other issues with cell phones. We want to make sure that somebody's not driving so that we don't distract them and they drive off the road. But the cell phone issue is more problematic in that people typically use their cell phones to just answer the phone with people that they know.
And the other issue with cell phones is that you don't necessarily know that that person is in the location where you're trying to poll, because I could have a cell phone that has an LA area code and yet I live somewhere else.
Yeah, and that is a problem, but not as big of a problem statistically as you might think. We aren't finding too many people that live outside of the state that we call just because they have, say, a New Hampshire cell phone. And we aren't really systematically excluding too many people who might, say, have a Massachusetts telephone number, but they're living in New Hampshire. The bigger issue with the cell phones, though, is just finding people who are old enough to vote, first of all, and having those people be honest in answering the phone and not answering the phone and not completing the survey if they aren't old enough.
So overall, would you say that you're still able to get accurate polling results with our changing technology and the increased use of cell phones?
Well, it varies. The hardest thing to do in any sort of pre-election polling is determine who's going to actually show up and vote. And in that sense, historically, cell phones have been maybe a little bit of an advantage because we do know that people who are more likely to vote are older, more established, and those people who are more likely to have a landline, whereas younger people and lower income, lower educated people are those people most likely to be in a cell phone only household. But what we've seen in presidential elections, polling has been actually quite accurate. It's been improving over the last several cycles. Midterm elections become more problematic because turnout is much more difficult to judge. In a general election, you're going to get roughly 60% turnout. In a midterm election, you might only get 40%, or in some states, 30 to 35%. So trying to figure out who's going to actually show up and getting them on the phone is the more difficult problem with that. And we saw that in the 2014 elections, there were a number of polls that were inaccurate. Another problem that I think we have with polling is the rise of polls of, I would say, less quality methodology, and that would be the robo-polls, where there really is no way that they can determine if the person they're talking to is eligible to vote, other than them saying they are. And then the rise of online polls, and the online polls don't even use random selection of individuals or random selection of telephone numbers. There's, first off, no way that you can draw a random sample using email addresses, for example. There's not even anything like a telephone directory of email addresses. And you don't want to just do a survey of people who go to your website and agree to participate in a poll. So the violation of the assumption of randomness is the biggest issue when you're dealing with online polls, although various organizations have come up with weighting schemes that seem to get around that or try to get around it. And this isn't the first time that technology has changed the polling industry. For the first 30-plus years of polling, and it really started in the 1930s, we used live interviewers. And it wasn't until the 1960s and into the 1970s when researchers developed random digit dialing methodologies for selecting samples that we were able to move to telephones. But those in-person interviews are still considered the gold standard of polls. They're just so much more expensive. So the question is not going to be, is there a better way to do it? It's going to be, is there a more cost-effective way that seems to get us the same results as the methods that we're currently using?
Why do we need political polls? Why can't we just wait till election day and find out what people think?
That's a great question, because you certainly can, and you will find out, and the polls are going to be meaningless after the election. I think, though, we have election polls for the same reason you have scoreboards at baseball games. People like to see what's happening now, and in polls are probably the best way of the relatively few ways that we can determine who's winning and who's losing. In primaries in particular, and we're in this period that we call the invisible primary, where there haven't been any votes, the ways that you can determine how well a candidate is doing is how much money they're raising, and especially how many people they're raising money from. Endorsements is another indication of support, particularly within a party. And then the third way is polling. All of these things are integrally related, so they feed on each other. If you're polling well, it's a lot easier to raise money.
Right.
And if you're raising money, it's a lot easier to get into the press, which boosts your polls numbers. But polls, I think, are useful in describing what's going on in an election. And if we don't like polls, the person we have to look at is the person in the mirror. Polls were developed in the very first place to sell newspapers. George Gallup had a guarantee when he first was offering the Gallup poll back in the 1936 election that his Gallup poll would be more accurate than the Literary Digest poll, which was a major straw poll going on at the time, or they would get their money back. And he also told newspapers and guaranteed that they would sell more newspapers if they ran his poll. And that's the same reason we have them today. Polls are there because people buy the paper more when there's a poll in it. They'll watch TV more when there are polls being reported. And with 24/7 newscasts, polls are actually a pretty inexpensive way to fill a lot of time on the news.
So with all that being said about polling, how do you feel about the fact that the upcoming Republican debate is going to be based on polls? The people who will be able to stand on that stage, the 10 people, are going to be the people who have the highest average in the polls.
I think that's really unfortunate for many reasons. First off, the difference between, say, the fourth or fifth candidate who's on that stage and the candidate who is not on the stage, you know, the 11th place candidate, is going to be insignificant statistically. There's not going to be any real difference between those people. In fact, you're probably going to get to the point where you're looking at half of a percentage point's difference between candidates. So there's no real mathematical way of doing that, even using averages of multiple polls. Secondly, and I think this is more important, there's no real national campaign that's going on. People may be paying a little bit of attention to it nationwide, maybe a tiny bit more attention to it, and even in states like New Hampshire and Iowa, but the campaign really hasn't been engaged, and voters won't really be engaged in this election until late in the fall. So we're asking people who are in states in which the campaigns aren't going on at all to ask who they favor at a time when nobody's paying attention to the race. So all we're going to get are reflections of name recognition of the candidates.
That's Andrew Smith, the director of the University of New Hampshire's Survey Center. He is co-author of the upcoming book, The First Primary, New Hampshire's Outsized Role in Presidential Nominations. Andrew Smith, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.